Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
Now a fight on the far side. Hartman and Bob Probert.
Super stoked and grateful to have Michael J. Hartman on All Over the Map today. Mike's an American former professional hockey player who played 397 games in the National Hockey League for 13 seasons for the Buffalo Sabres, Winnipeg Jets, Tampa Bay Lightning, and New York Rangers. He was drafted in the 7th round, 131st overall by the Sabres in the 1986 NHL entry draft, and a boot. He's a Stanley Cup champion. All right, we'd like to welcome Mike Hartman, today's guest on All Over the Map. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? How are you, Ryan?
It's going wonderful. Really grateful to have you on the show, man.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Anything for you.
Thank you, and anything for you, too. So, super serious question to kick things off. What would be the coolest animal to scale up to the size of a horse?
That's a good one. You're trying to wake me up here. A hippopotamus.
Great answer. Yeah, I was gonna say an aardvark, but
okay. Yeah,
I think a hippo would be a good one.
Okay.
All right. So, what are some of the things that are okay to do occasionally, but definitely not okay to do every day?
Occasionally. Oh boy, you're putting me on the spot now. I thought you're really making me think. So occasionally I sleep in, you know, for me. So I don't know about anybody else. So usually I get up at 5 a.m. I start my day. I try to live a healthy lifestyle. I stick to a plan. But, you know, for me, hey, if I want to sleep in some days, it's okay. Last night was Halloween. I had 10 cookies, 15 cookies. I don't know.
That's it.
I had a lot of cookies. I'm joking. I had a lot of cookies last night. So occasionally you're allowed to splurge and have some cookies. So what else? Is that what you're, you know?
I jumped into a bag of salt and vinegar chips, a Reese's Pieces bar, and Cadbury eggs. So I'm definitely not innocent. I go for my old sugar binges too. So yeah.
As long as you live within moderation, as long as you, you know, you're doing the right things, taking care of yourself, and on occasion you do something, I don't think it's too bad. It's like to a point.
Right on. Okay. All right. So after playing in the Ontario Hockey League for the Belleville Bulls and North Bay Centennials, you were drafted 131st overall by the Buffalo Sabres. Let's hear about all your, the journey to the NHL. Was playing in the NHL your dominating dream as a young boy growing up in Michigan?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Michigan. I love baseball. So I when we had enough funds, you know, my father would take us to a Detroit Tigers baseball game back then. Or my uncle, who worked at the post office, would, you know, I was really young, 6, 7 years old, say, hey, I'm taking you down to Tiger Stadium to see the Detroit Tigers. And then it went into hockey. So then I started to really love hockey. Yeah, it was a dream to play hockey. And like anybody else, just like yourself, all of us dream of playing hockey. But the journey getting there wasn't so easy. So you mentioned Belleville. So I played for the Belleville Bulls. Well, I first played AAA hockey for a fantastic coach who you would love. His name is Chris Corey, out of Michigan. Just such a fabulous coach, mentor, teacher, somebody that knows how to work with players and kids, and he worked with development. He was great. From there, I went to play Tier 2 Junior in Canada, and I lived with the toughest guy to play Canadian hockey. He played in Alberta in the Western Hockey League, and then his family moved to Ontario for work, and this guy, Bob Langley, his father moved to Ontario. So he played for Sudbury and Ottawa. and he was a killer. So he taught me a little bit how to be tough. I was this little wimp out of Detroit, and I'm not saying I'm tough now, you know, not at 53 anyways, but even back then he taught me. So then I was thinking about playing college hockey, and I had a bunch of scholarships, and somebody who I was friends with named Steve Conroy, who played for the Calgary Flames and different teams, introduced me to Gus Bedale. And to make a long story short, I played in Belleville, and it was a disaster. It was a disaster. So played for the Belleville Bulls. Right away, coach didn't, you know how it is. The coach didn't like me. He was tough on me, and it's not poor me. I probably could have done better. I probably could have played better, been more aware of my surroundings, been more present. But overall, it was a really bad situation. So I asked Larry Mabity after that. I didn't get drafted to the NHL draft. I had a couple general managers tell me to quit, go back to school, go do something else. I'm never going to make it. That motivated me a little bit. So from there, Belleville was horrible. I didn't get drafted. And Jimmy Devolano called me from the Detroit Red Wings. And it was the nicest thing ever. He was a four-time Stanley Cup winner, I think three or four times with the Islanders. When they were with the Islanders, he worked for the Islanders as a scout. Then with the Detroit Red Wings, he won all those Stanley Cups. But back then he called me and he says, listen, going to Belleville, we watched you play, and you never did anything really well. So if you follow my plan, I will give you a tryout when you were 20. So that was probably the nicest thing. So that's my career leading to Belleville. So I'm doing all the talking here. You know, people come on my show and they talk all the time. I say, hey, shut up. So that's what got me to Belleville. And thank goodness I was traded out of there, or I don't know what I'd be doing.
What would have been your second choice for a profession?
That's a good question. Well, no, at that time there wasn't, unfortunately, because I put all my eggs in one basket. But after I didn't get drafted, I went back to school and I was on the 10-year plan. I ended up getting a degree in small business management and marketing, went to Canadore College, went to Loyalist College while I was playing, and took a bunch of credits. And there was one institution that took all my credits, and I have a piece of paper, which is good. I show them I don't know if it's doing anything for me, but I thought it was good to go back to school. You know, I'm on the bus and guys are going to sleep, and I'm studying Aristotle, David Humes, and Socrates, because I had to take a sociology course. These guys are looking at me like, really, what's going on? But just the Belleville days was horrible. I mean, the coach, everything about it was bad, except the people I lived with were okay. They were good, really good people. I still talk to them today. And I asked him if he could trade me. That first game I scored back after the next year, that year I didn't get drafted, I came back and I scored, I think I had two goals in three games with Belleville. And he was still getting on me. And I asked him, this coach, I said, Larry Mabity, I said, do you like me? He goes, no, I don't like you. I said, why? He said, because, you know, you're not a bad kid, but you're not a kid I'm looking for. I'm looking for a big, tough guy to do it. You know, we don't need you as a scorer. I said, so why am I here? Because I was really going to quit. That word with a Q. I said, I had enough. He called me late at, like, after practice. He says, meet me at the Dairy Queen. My friends laugh when I tell him. I go, Dairy Queen? He goes, let's have a Dairy Queen. And that was the nicest thing ever. He got me an ice cream. We sat and had an ice cream together. He says, where do you want to go? I'm going to trade you. I'm going to get you out of here. I'll grant you your wishes. I said, can you trade me? I'm from Detroit. Can you trade me to Windsor, which borders Detroit? Can you trade me to Kitchener, Guelph, London, Toronto, somewhere closer? He goes, I'll work on it for you. So the next day he calls me up. He goes, we traded you to North Bay, which is the farthest northern place I could be traded to, next to Sault Ste. Marie. That's how much he liked me. I said, North Bay? He goes, yeah, we traded you for a goal scorer. And I said, great. So I go to North Bay, and it just worked out. It's funny how you think, you know, sometimes you plan, you think you want to go somewhere. I played for Bert Templeton, the toughest coach. He's the one that had that big brawl, and everybody knows him in Canada for that big fiasco he had. But he helped me, and I got drafted at 19 years old the next year, and I made the Sabres that year. And then I got sent back to junior. So that's a story. I'm sticking to it. And it was good development from good people. And a big thank you to Jimmy Devolano from the Detroit Red Wings, because he really went out of his way for me. And he helped me. If he didn't give me a plan, then I would have been maybe stuck as well. But then I go to Burt Templeton. I took that plan with me. I implemented it and ended up, you know, playing for the Buffalo Sabres at 19 years old. So
that's a great message. I mean, sometimes we think that the worst things in the world that happen to us actually open the doorways to opportunity. So it's like, you know, it's everything happens for a reason. It sounds like your reason definitely aligned and everything worked out. So, you know, not giving up, and that Q word, that Q word's a real shit word. It's not in my makeup. I don't think it's in yours either.
No, that's true. But what happens is sometimes is it's like, you know, you learn in school, right? When the mice go to the cage and the door shuts, okay, we're going to deal with that. Then the mice, it goes to the other part of the cage where the cheese is and the door shuts. Then the mice goes to the third place and the door shuts. What happens? The mouse wants to give up. It's not that they're quitters. It's like when you have the door slammed in your face a lot. So when you're going through your first year of junior and you're immature, I was a little uneducated, not prepared. Like, I blame myself. And then you go to a place where you're not really wanted. It doesn't feel good. And you gave up your eligibility. Not that I was a great student, but I was a student good enough to go to Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio, and a handful of other schools that recruited me. My SATs were strong enough. Everything fit to play Division I hockey. And then when you give that up and you wake up and you see your friends getting drafted that did play college hockey, like a Danton Cole, who I grew up with in Detroit, became good friends with him, played in Tampa and Winnipeg with him. And some other guys, I'd say, you know what, I'm going to go to school and get my degree. And if hockey works, great. But when you put all your eggs in one basket and that basket breaks, it's tough. It is. It was a tough thing to swallow. It hits you emotionally.
Absolutely. Human beings driven on the old emotions. Yeah. And especially that game, athletics, is so driven on the emotions, you know? So yeah, it's how we take it. Right. So anyways, you played for four teams in the NHL, including the 94 Stanley Cup champion, New York Rangers. I heard that you and Eddie Olchuk, were left off the Stanley Cup. What's the story behind that? As I heard that the Rangers went to bat for you and eventually your guys' names were embedded on the cup. So,
yeah, well, you go back and that was the last stop for me. I was at the end of my playing days in the NHL there, you know, played a lot in Buffalo, went to Winnipeg, was great. Expansion team in Tampa, except a bad injury that year. And I ended up going to the New York Rangers. And it was we had such a great team. I mean, we had a powerhouse team. Back then, there wasn't a salary cap. And the Rangers had the highest payroll in the National Hockey League by a lot. And some people say, hey, you know, the Rangers bought a team. It's ridiculous, but that's not true. But we did have a heck of a team. Guys that you wouldn't even think about, that people don't talk about, like Steve Larmer, who played for the Chicago Blackhawks, is one of the – I think he might be one of the all-time leading scorers there, and he played more games consistently than any other player in the National Hockey League. Glenn Healy was a star goalie, then he's a backup goalie. Dougie Lidster was the captain of the Vancouver Canucks, and he's sitting in the press box. Eddie Olchuk scores 40 goals, and he's not cracking the lineup. So I look at the roster, and I was like, how am I going to play? And we did. We got in there when we can. I almost lost my eye that year and had a couple bad injuries, but I was healthy even towards the end of the year. And they told me, you're an insurance policy and be ready. So you have to play 40 games to get your name on the Stanley Cup. I think Eddie played 38. I played 35. Maybe I have to go back and look. And it came out at the end. We were on the roster all year. We played. We were part of the team. It's the coach's decision that you don't dress. And if you look at the guys we had, and the one guy I was going to take if anybody's spot would be Joey Koser. He was the toughest guy in the game. So we had him in the lineup. So I didn't get in there, but you're still part of the team. You play. Like you watch again, the New York Yankees, if he's a catcher and he gets in there when he can, or if you're backing up Jeter, you do whatever you can to be part of the team. And you're there all there. You're maybe a small piece to a big puzzle. But the reality is you get in when you're called upon. And like I said, it's a fantastic year that way, growing with some of the guys that were my heroes as kids, like Mark Messier and Kevin Lowe and McTavish. And, if you look at the list of guys that played in Edmonton that won Stanley Cups, you know, I learned so much about leadership from those guys. That was just a great year. And Mike Gartner, who actually got traded, was with the Players Association. So we had all these great people. Gartz gets traded. We had Glenn Anderson come in, another champion, won many Stanley Cups. And it turned out that I didn't play enough games. And Mike Gartner, who got traded from our team to Toronto, went to bat for us.
Wow.
Along with everybody else and said, listen, they're on the roster all year. And we had our names added to the Stanley Cup. It was just during the lockout. And Mike Gartner was a big part of that. He called me and says, hey, I'm going to fight to get your name on a cup. That's called a classy guy. That's hard. You meet people like that in the world. Almost put a tear in my eye, which probably did put a tear in my eye. And they added our names on the Stanley Cup. You know where it says made in China on the bottom?
Yeah.
That's where we are. No, I'm kidding, but we're there. I joke with Eddie. We had a good year. You know, we had hot stoves. You know, we weren't dressing. We would rip on each other, like Glenn Healy, Kiprios, myself, Doug Lidster, Phil Bork, when he was there, he got traded at the end. Eddie O, we'd sit around and there was no holding back. There was no rules. And that part was fun. We made it fun for each other.
Right on.
And, it was a good year.
Awesome. Yeah, I was a Canucks fan at the time. I think as an 18-year-old, I was actually game six. I was sitting with all the scouting staff and a bunch of the wives and whatnot because of one of the scouting staff members was watching me when I was playing in Regina and whatnot. I was so happy on game six, but I think I had tears in my eyes and we lost that year. It was, but that was a hard fought series. I mean, Vancouver came back. I think it was after 3-1. You guys were up 3-1, came back. There was a bit of a hope there. I think Lafayette went on a breakaway and hit the post or something like that.
It could have gone either way. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, they say they're the greatest fans in New York with the Rangers. Like, they're crazy there. They say crazy Ranger fans in a way because they are crazy nutty fans, and I could only imagine what would happen if we did lose game seven. But I mean, anybody could win a game seven. I'm a big baseball fan. I watched the Dodgers and the Tampa Bay recently, and I said, you know, well, anybody could they didn't go to game seven, but it could have, and anybody could have won that series. I you know, it's like in any game seven in any sport, anybody can go to game seven. And what happens, it's almost like, you know, you have to have that momentum, you have to have everything going for you, and we did. And I think what we had is experience on that team. Even Greg Gilbert, who won Stanley Cups with the New York Islanders, I mean, we had so many different guys that have been there and won that they were, it was just calming. It wasn't like there wasn't any big intensity. We had Mark Messier, don't forget about him.
Yeah, not a bad player.
Yeah, but unbelievable. Like, we had really a great team.
Right on. Yeah, so it kind of leads into this question. Yeah, so what was playing with, in my mind, and many others, the best leader of all time, Mark Messier? What was that like? And what leadership qualities rubbed off on you that you incorporate into your life today?
That's a great question. I don't think there's enough words to explain what kind of a leader or person he is. He's very quiet, but when he says something, he means it. Like, and it's funny, when he walks in the room, the atmosphere of the room changes, the energy changes. It's amazing. So you wonder how a person can do that. And he was great in many ways, like making sure that everybody was taken care of, whether you're one of our guys that passed out the towels. He was an older gentleman named Benny, and they even, Mark Messier made sure at the end that he would get a Stanley Cup ring. This guy was, I think, 80 years old, and Benny would be around the rink for years, and Mark brought him in. He was passing towels out at our practice facility, and there's only so many Stanley Cup rings, but somehow, I don't know if that seal wasn't broken. You know, what they do is Belfour, is they make so many rings and break the seal, but this guy got a ring with his name on it. And Mess would make sure that everybody was taken care of. I remember one night I was playing against Florida. I was playing really well at this time, and I was going to sit out against Florida. And Mess says, you're not going tonight. I said, no. And he was angry. He went in the room, talked to Mike Keenan. I was playing. He said, "Your mother's here tonight?" I said, "Yeah, they don't do it because your family's there." But Mess went out of his way to make sure I was going to play that night. And you just don't hear about stuff like that. So how I bring that into my own life, I have a leadership business to this day. I'm definitely not Mark Messier, but I've learned a lot from him. And I just learned how to implement some of those skills into even my business, like listening to people, you know, especially in leadership. Effective communication is important. There's a lot of things that you learn, and I learned from people better than any education I've ever had, any certification that I took. I've taken many. When you're around a leader like that every day, it rubs off. And it's true when they talk about leadership in sports and how important that leader can be to a team. And it's just monumental for in so many ways.
That's awesome. So how passionate are you in regards to peak human performance? You talked about your own business. Let's hear a little bit about that.
Well, I've been, when I was retired, I had to figure out what I was going to do. I thought I was going to coach. So I became a player coach in the minors. I was a captain of Hershey partway through the year. And then that didn't, I ended up having stomach surgery. It was a really tough year with Colorado. In fact, Colorado signed me after I went to the finals in the IHL, which was really good back then. Utah was the Islanders' top farm team. Kansas City was the top farm team for San Jose. We were an independent team with guys like Alan Bester on it, Bobby Joyce, Dave Barr, guys that were good NHL players. And I had a good year. Alan May, I ended up having a pretty good year. And Colorado said, "We're going to sign you and you're going to play games with us." I go, "Wow, I'm back." I thought I was done going to Orlando. That I was going to pack it in, go back to Detroit where I'm from. I had a house. And I go to Colorado and I made the team. And they said, "Well, you're going down to Hershey," because what happened was I tore my stomach muscle. It's the worst injury you could have. Try to play on it. Bob Hartley kept saying, "Come on, are you, what's going on with you?" I said, "I can't move." You know, we had Bob McGill as assistant coach. They looked at me and the doctor said, "Well, I think he's okay." Finally, I had it operated on the University of Avalanche sent me to the University of Massachusetts. They operated right away and I was done, but came back and played, tried to play in one of the games for the Bears, Hershey Bears in the finals. And I played a game and we won a Calder Cup, which was great. I mean, Bob Hartley is a great coach, great development coach. And we were just a pretty average team that won the Calder Cup. It was crazy. So I almost had three championships in almost three different years. We almost won it in Orlando, but we lost game seven to Utah. And then we lost, we could have won that series, but it didn't work out. So it would have been nice to have a ring in all three leagues. That would have been fun.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? All right, so let's talk brain health. It's no secret you fought some of the toughest big boys ever, guys like Bob Probert. That's just to name one. We've had chats about concussions and whatnot. What do you take these days as far as supplements to sustain your optimization, you know, with your brain health and overall well-being?
Well, it's great that my girlfriend's a dietitian with multiple degrees in nutrition. So she's helped me, but I haven't had, knock on wood, the time I had a car accident was bad. And I did have some, I was knocked out one time and I was, I've had injuries, but you know, the concussion thing is tough. It's almost like you don't really want to talk too much about it. So what I've done is always just try to take care of myself. And I take a product now, which is unbelievable. Okay. I mean, people were putting things in front of me and I have a product that helps your overall, it goes right through. I don't want to sound like an expert in this. I'm not an expert in nutrition, but it goes right through your body. You know, the way it's absorbed, there's patents on this product. It's called Protobite.
Okay.
And it's crazy. Then there's a brain reward product as well. So I do believe in products that help. This product gives me more energy. I'm feeling better. I'm sleeping better. So I'm a big fan of it. So that's what I'm doing. Plus, I take care of myself by exercising every day, from yoga to body weight training to walking, hiking, running. So overall, I feel pretty good.
That sounds wonderful. Maybe what we'll do, maybe we'll put a link or something like that at the end of the podcast and people can actually look into that product. I'd like to know more about it myself as well. So
we're going to talk about it. Absolutely. I mean, it's phenomenal.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for that information. So can you please tell our audience a little bit about the Mike Hartman Show?
The Mike Hartman Show.
Yeah.
Well, it's the show is I started it out for fun. And I started a podcast out during, it was in March. I'm isolated in just outside of New York City. And I said, okay, what am I going to do? And Stephon Matteau's a good friend. So I interviewed him. And I got this technology StreamYard. And we went on and people on Facebook says, oh, we loved it. So I said, let's get Adam Graves on and let's get Matteau on together. So the two of us got on and we had 6,000 people on Facebook. In my Facebook group, they're like us. Like it was crazy. And I go, 6,000 is a big number. Someone said, you know what kind of numbers that is? Then I had Mike Lotish, who went to the Super Bowl six times, four with Buffalo, two with Denver. And I started having these different people on. And it was a show just like starting for fun. I made the mistake as I uploaded all like the first 17 episodes to Apple. And I should have done it differently, little than I know. But I'm on my 50th episode. I had this guy on the other day. I can't think of his name. No, I'm kidding. No, we had you. Now, you were great. And what happened, it's called the Mike Hartman Show, but it's all about stories, mindset, and champions. So all of us have a story, right? All of us have a story, some different than others. All of us take different paths in life. And mindset's important for what we do, even for brain health, for taking care of ourselves, to weathering the good and the bad and self-talk and all the other self-development things we could do. And I had some champions on, like many different Stanley Cup champions to Super Bowl champions to a guy from the Yankees, the Mets, a guy from the Miracle Mets, Art Shamsky from the 1969 Miracle Mets. And then I have other people as well. And we just talk about those three things, stories, mindset, and champions on the Mike Hartman Show. So
I love it.
Yeah.
You can't lose with that.
Right.
Awesome. So you were inducted into the Jewish Hall of Fame in 2012. That's obviously an honor. Let's hear all about that.
Well, I didn't grow up like being very like my grandfather would say, hey, can you take off? There's like two high holidays in the Jewish year, you know, there's Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So you know, my grandfather, who grew up in Brooklyn, say, I don't care if you play sports, you need 2 days to take off in your life. I want you to take those 2 days off. I said, well, one thing, you know, I'm a fourth line NHL player with the Rangers, fourth and fifth line. So there's no fifth line. So that's the joke. Like, so I'm on the, so, you know, you're in and out of the lineup. You have to, you can't take yourself out of the lineup, especially, you know, at that level. So proud to be part of the Jewish community. You know, never a superstar. Like I said, it wasn't like Hank Greenberg, who was a guy that would do that, or Sandy Koufax, that was a pitcher in Major League Baseball that took off during those holidays. But, you know, I just, you know, it was an honor. I'm in two Hall of Fames, the Michigan one.
Yep.
Which, who you might remember, Kurt Frazier. Do you know Kurt?
Absolutely. I met Kurt Frazier in Vancouver. Absolutely. Yeah.
He's my favorite. He's one of my favorites. And I was playing for him in Orlando. And I told him, hey, I was just inducted to the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. He goes, are you going? I said, no, we have practice tomorrow. He goes, we have practice next week. He goes, are you kidding me? So he got me a plane ticket. He took care of me. Such a great guy. What a great guy to play for. I loved him. I love Kurt. I really liked him as a coach. Played for him. And then I went to the Michigan one. Then I was inducted and took my kids to the one in New York, to the big one. But I guess it's an honor. Yeah, it's a nice honor. It's something that I don't think about very much. I mean, I don't even have, if you look around, I don't have pictures all over the wall. I have one picture in my place in the Stanley Cup. I don't have all kinds of hockey pictures. They're put away just for the reason is, you know, we've moved on from hockey. It's been a big part of my life, but I don't have jerseys and things hung up.
That's funny. But last year I actually, I gave all my hockey trophies away. I was just like, I don't need these anymore. This is, you know, this is the old life, but
well, we're still proud of what we've done, right? We're still proud. you know, you've done a lot, right? So you've done, you're a hockey player. You played junior hockey. All of us have different paths but it's a good part of your life, but I was never one, you know. I gave my son my ring, you know, from the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. I said, just keep this forever. Please don't lose it. It's something that, so I'm not, and I've worn my Stanley Cup ring maybe, and I'm very proud of it, but I probably wore that in the last 10 years, maybe five times, once on the 25th anniversary with the Rangers. And it's something that it's I'm proud of, but it's a part of your life. And plus you draw attention to yourself. You start walking around with the Stanley Cup ring. It's like, you're proud of it. Believe me, I can't take anything away. There's guys that wear it. But for me, I just, I'm here in North Carolina where they say, bless your heart. I didn't know what that meant until I don't think you know what it means, but you could figure it out. When they say, bless your heart, go look it up. they're not being nice. So they're not really hockey fans. And maybe for business sometimes, if you're doing, I did a leadership event with the bank. So I worked, the bank brought me in to speak, or I did one with dentists and I wore it. They asked me to wear it, but yeah.
So we talked about coaches, obviously playing for old Iron Mike. He actually used to live in the same building as me in Vancouver. And I don't think he ever said hi back. How you doing? What was that experience like playing for Mike? And who was your favorite coach of all time?
Favorite coach was when I was 6 years old in Detroit. I kept falling and I couldn't get up, and this guy helped me up. I'm not kidding. There's a lot of great coaches. I had Rick Dudley. They're always great when they like you and play you. Come on, that's the reality, right? But I've had some good people. I've had like Kurt Frazier, Chris Corey, who I mentioned earlier, in Mitch. I've had a lot of great coaches. I mean, I played for Scotty Bowman. It was an honor that he wanted me on his team. Then Mike Keenan could have traded me at the end, but he kept me. So yeah, is he different? Oh, it's tough, man. Playing for him was very tough, because if you're a fourth liner and you make a mistake, there's a lot of good books out there that share some funny stories. And if you ever get Glenn Healy on your show, he's not a guy that holds back, but I don't sit there. You know, I enjoy Mike Keenan to this day. Like, we've had some really good talks.
Yeah.
Enjoy his company. I've talked to him, and he had to do what he did at that time to get the best out of people, whether you agree with it or not. It was tough. And, but he's very engaging. You would be surprised. He's a guy that used to play in a band, you know, and did a lot of things, and, you know, a little bit different. But for me, it was, I was fortunate to have been on that team, because he could have easily gotten rid of me and threw me into a deal. And he kept guys that he wanted around, and I thank him to this day, because I never would have a Stanley Cup. My name wouldn't even be on the bottom where it says made in China. It would, you know. So I can't say anything bad about him.
No, that's awesome. So what's a day in Mike Hartman's life like?
A day. Okay, so I lived outside of New York City, and that was great. I'm up early. It's nice here too now, but you know, things have changed. So it was fantastic. You get up in New York. I started my workout very early, take a shower, go into the city. It was even more special when I'd visit my daughter when she was in. She lived in Soho for a while. And that was great. Had breakfast with her sometimes, did that a few times, and she'd come to see me. And then I'd start my day on appointments and really started to share with people what I did. And then the Rangers alumni had me do a lot of stuff the past 3 years, where I would go to games, meet people, do events for them, travel to do it. I did so much. What an amazing best organization in the world. They were so good to me. I mean, I can't even tell you. Adam Graves, who's a big part of it. I did a lot of stuff with Stephan Matteau, another great guy, great teammate. And that was so much fun for me, because I lived in North Carolina for so many years, and you almost have an identity crisis here. You start talking sports with somebody. I didn't even tell people I played hockey here. Then you go back to where you played, and it was really exciting. So that was a day there. A day here is very quiet. I get up, I do my workout, go for a Starbucks, eat have a yogurt and a healthy bagel. But right, there's some carbs for you and sugar, but and I start my day and I'm constantly trying to build our business again. And nice. that's what I do.
Sounds like a pretty good day to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So might as well wrap things up here. But what's Mike Hartman's message to the world in these times?
In these times, you know, as a coach, it's tough. There's more mental health issues going on now than there ever was. And that's just by statistics. I was with a psychologist last night at his house, and he was telling me there's so many things going on in this world that we almost can't control. Now, again, if they decide to lock up the country, which I'm reading they're starting to do, even in Canada. So my friend works out at a gym, and that's his therapy. Now you have to wait in line to go to a gym in Toronto, and maybe they'll let you in depending on how many people are there, but you have to wait in line. So our lives have changed. So I tell people in coaching, if you're always on track, which I don't know how many people are, it means you're going full speed ahead. Everything's great. There's nothing in your way. If you're going east and west, we're sideways and we have to work on, okay, now things are unbalanced. And then if you're going south, you're going the wrong way. You're really lost. So if you're east and west and you need a little work getting back on track, do all the little things and details as you would even as a hockey player, like do little things. Get up earlier. If you have a cluttered desk, it's like that adds stress. A cluttered desk is a cluttered mind. So again, if you're going full speed ahead, hey, more power to you. I don't know how many people that are really going full speed ahead. Some people say they are. But the east and west thing, make sure that if you're off track, you do little things to get yourself back on track. Maybe do something a little bit better. I had this young kid on my show. I can't take credit for this. He says he does the 1% thing. I go, what is that? He said, I do 1%. I do something 1% better every day. Just little changes in my life. I said, that was great. It's like me. If I have, you know, 3 cookies, have 1 cookie. So try to, you know, minimize your life. Minimalization is important. And if you're really going south, I would seek help. Because if you're really struggling and you're having crazy thoughts, I'm not a therapist. Don't listen to me. Consult your doctor. I would really talk to somebody that could help you because, you know, you could be really stuck. And to get unstuck, you probably need professional help. So that would be the message. Full speed ahead. Keep going east and west. You can make little changes. If you're going south, please talk to somebody.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was talking to a guy the other day, 23-year-old kid out of Buffalo, and he had a meeting with his psychologist, and he's never had any mental health issues up until the last like 4 or 5 months, he was telling me. And he was telling me that the suicide rates have gone up 40% in the United States of America since this whole C word, you know, kind of came engulfed into our physical reality, so to speak. But I kind of saw it coming even when it first hit. I was asked at the Vancouver airport after coming in from California. They said, what do you think is going to be happening with all this? This is like before the mask and all the so-called craziness, whatever went down. I said, if people are going to be in quarantine and isolation, all that kind of stuff, what's the first thing that addicts turn to? Isolation. What's the first thing that people with mental health issues usually turn to? Isolation. So I think it's, you know, it's taking way, way more people out on the mental health aspect than it is the actual virus. Not that to say that the virus isn't real, or, you know, you hear all these conspiracy theories of it's human created and da 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 da, supposed to, you know, slam down the global economy, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's it can mess with your mind, especially when it's slowing down the world a lot too. So it's like when people are so used to being at, like, you know, we're obviously creatures of habit. You know, when we get into those habitual grooves and then having to, like, you know, kind of reinforce these, you know, habits and whatnot, so, like going to the gym, you got to make an appointment the day before to go to the swimming pool here. We're up in the Okanagan where I am. So it's like, you know, it's, and people get pissed off. I mean, I go to the gym on a daily basis usually. And I mean, people get pissed off if you forget to spray down one of your bikes that you're on or whatever.
Oh, it's awful. Can I ask you one question?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a very serious question. Take us off topic. Like, is it okay we talk about it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Have you ever seen the Loch Ness Monster where you are?
I think maybe the Ogopogo in Okanagan Lake.
Right, Ogopogo. Isn't that the Loch Ness Monster? Isn't that the same thing? Isn't that where it was?
I think maybe brothers and sisters. I don't know. But yeah, the Ogopogo. Ogopogo. That's a great question. Yeah, but you know, that in Okanagan Lake, and I actually live like Okanagan Lake's literally like not even 5 minutes away from my place. So I actually go down there usually in the mornings and drink my coffee and take a couple deep breaths to get my day started. You know, so
nice.
Yeah, the Ogopogo. God, we should put an image of that over top of our show.
That should be, you know, that could be a whole podcast itself. You know.
Yeah, who is and where is and what is the Ogopogo?
Do people believe in that where you are? Like, is that something?
I mean, it's a big myth, but I mean, do you believe in the Sasquatch?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it all depends on, right. I mean, it was in our books in school. It showed the actual pictures of Ogopogo, right? Didn't it show it when you were in school? Didn't it teach you? Yeah. We called it the Loch Ness Monster, what we learned in the States. So anyways, I had to ask you that question.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I'll be thinking about that one all day. Actually, I might even go for a dip in the lake later and see if I can find him.
Yeah.
Or her.
Who knows? Yeah, that's true.
Or the kids.
Right.
Yeah, they might be hiding right now underwater with scuba masks.
Man, that's a scary. I'd be afraid to go in that lake personally.
Yeah, I only go up maybe about like 20 meters tops. Yeah, right up to my waist. That's about it.
I'm sure kids are afraid to go there.
Maybe. I don't know. Or maybe kids want to see the Loch Ness Monster, the Ogopogo. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyways, any final words there, Mikey?
No, it's great being on your show and looking forward to getting to even know you better. And
absolutely. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Your time has been greatly appreciated by everyone, obviously. So, yeah, we'll be in touch soon. And yeah, man, just keep doing what you're doing because you're definitely an inspiration to me.
Oh, likewise. Thanks, Ryan. Have
a great day. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.